This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 85. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show that focuses on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything else you can think of in between. We cover it here, and we hope you will expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the program on a regular basis. As always, I'm going to kick off this week's episode with my own author update, and I just released book two in the Huntress Clan saga. Huntress Apprentice carries on the story of Quinn Faust, absolutely one of my favorite characters I've ever made. She's a lot of fun to write. She and her whole gang are just totally a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it. You'll definitely want to check this series out if you haven't already. Huntress Initiate is the name of book one in the series, in case you haven't picked it up yet. I've also finished the draft of Huntress Cadet 3 this week, so I'm actually starting in on editing that, and we'll be getting through that in the next couple of weeks and getting that off to the editor. I can't wait for you to read what's next for Quinn and her band of supernatural heroes, so that should be out probably sometime around the end of February once the editing process is done. You can always check out more information about what I'm up to, including sneak peeks of upcoming covers, special giveaways, and more by visiting my fan group on Facebook, and that is Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. It's over at my website as well, jamiedavisbooks.com, so you can find me in both places. And I always look forward to hearing from you, so please reach out to me and check in when you get a chance. On today's show, I'm interviewing Brian D. Anderson. Now, he's coming back on the show. You might remember I had Brian on the show about 7 months ago, and he was talking about his existing books, but he was teasing an upcoming project, and he wouldn't tell us much about it. Well, guess what? I brought him back to talk about that project, The Bard's Blade, and that actually comes out next week. It's already available for pre-order, so you can get it right now for the pre-order price. But it comes out next week, and I'm really excited. If you didn't check out the original episode about Brian and his other books, I'll just link to it in the show notes for this episode. Brian is the indie best-selling fantasy author of The Godling Chronicles, Dragonvane, and Akiri, which he co-authored with Stephen Saville. His books have sold more than 500,000 copies worldwide, and his audiobooks are perennially popular. Currently, he lives in the sleepy southern town of Fairhope, Alabama, with his wife and son, who both inspire him daily. Here's my chat with Brian. Check it out. Hi, Brian. Welcome back to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure being back. There's been a lot been going on since last time we talked. It
definitely has for both of us. I've been paying attention to what you've been up to. Before we jump into everything that's going on now, why don't we just give everybody a quick recap and just tell us briefly a little bit about yourself for those that didn't listen to the episode from back earlier last year.
Okay, yeah, well, I've been an indie author, independent author, for the past about 9 years. I was part of that first kind of like indie explosion around 2010 to 2012. I mean, there were indies before that, but that's when we really started getting a lot of popularity. And recently I'm sort of pulling a little bit away from indie and signed a 3-book deal with Tor. And that's kind of like the direction my career is going now.
Awesome. And we talked a little bit about that last time we were in touch, but we wanted to get you back on the show to talk about it closer to the release of The Bard's Blade, which is the first book in The Sorcerer's Song. I assume it's a trilogy, yes?
It is a trilogy. The first two books are written, and I'm working on on book three. So, which should be, you know, I've got about a couple more months till I'm finished with that one. But yeah, it's been a really fun series to write too. So,
oh, I'll bet. I actually am about halfway through Bard's Blade. You got me a preview copy, which I appreciated. And that's exciting. And I know Chorus of Fire looks like it's slated to come out in August of this year, which is pretty cool. What's it been like? What's the big shift been like for you going from being, you know, focused on an indie career and then signing with a publisher? So you kind of have both things going on, irons in both fires, as it were.
Yeah, it's been a uniquely challenging and rewarding experience. See, as an indie, there's certain, you know, you have pretty much control over everything. And you hear these horror stories coming out of indie about how terrible traditional publishing is. And I suppose some of the horror stories might be true, but I haven't experienced them. My transition, thanks to the people over at Tor, my transition has been fantastic. Working with Lindsay Hall and working with, all the publicists and all the, you know, people in the art department and all these, they've just been great. The thing about the transition, though, you got to learn to relinquish some of that control and let go a little bit of your ego, too, because you got to start realizing, you know, some other people have some thoughts that might be better than yours. And, you know, not getting too wrapped up in, you know, in yourself, you know, and like getting offended, like when somebody says, hey, this might not necessarily be a good direction, and actually taking their opinions and ideas into account is something that I kind of had to learn how to do. But thanks to, you know, like I said, you know, The Barge Blade, when it was first written, I thought was a good book, but listening to Lindsay's input and the way she helped me mold the story, I came to realize that, you know, man, that she's not a senior editor over there for no reason. She knows what she's doing, and she helped me turn it into something I think is really special.
Yeah, it's funny. I worked on a collaboration from earlier this year, starting in the summertime, and for a while, it really kicked my ass because, you know, I've got 30 books out that do all right and have good reviews, and I felt pretty good about things and my ability to tell a good story. But there were some things that, you know, the collaborator and I disagreed on. And, you know, when I started looking hard at what they were saying, I had to, you know, like you said, put my ego in the back seat and say, you know what, there's some merit to what they're talking about. And I need to remember there's not just one way to do this. And maybe their way is a better way. So we took a couple of rewrites and we came around and came up with a really good product because of it and because of some beta reader input and editor input. So I completely get what you're talking about. I think even for an indie, it's important to bring other voices in so that you're not in that tunnel vision or in that echo chamber.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it helps keep your stories fresh. I mean, there were some things that, you know, that I stuck, you know, that I really wanted to stick by. And, you know, I mean, when I disagreed, and that was another thing, when I had disagreements, it wasn't, you know, just because they were the publisher, they would just override me. You know, if I thought they were wrong, I would say so. And we'd have a discussion about it, and depending on how the discussion went, the direction it would go. And there was times I was right, you know what I mean? And they were not, and their ego wasn't so big that they thought that, you know, that they were always right. So it was a great collaboration between on both ends of it.
I think that sounds great, and I think that's one of the things that you know, a good, like you said, a good editor and a good relationship with your publisher, no matter how you work it out, is a good way to come about it. Because Lord knows there's plenty of like horror stories from the indie side of things, too. And, you know, I think it really depends on what fits what you're doing at the time. You shifted from one to the other, but you've got books that are still out there and earning and doing those things. So you've got to kind of keep both things rolling.
And Lindsay, like I said, Lindsay's like, she didn't get to her position for no reason. I mean, she worked with Nicholas Eames on Kings of the Wild. I mean, she already had a stellar reputation. So it wasn't like I was working with somebody who was unproven or unknown or that I had to question, you know, does this person know what's right? Actually, I had more reason to trust her than she had to trust me.
Well, and that Lord knows Kings of the Wild is a great book, and that all the books in that series are fantastic. So,
Nicholas,
I mean, that's good stuff.
Really nice guy too. Really nice guy.
Oh, absolutely. I had him on the show and it was a lot of fun chatting with him. Just for all the stuff that goes on, he slips some great band references, and I know you'd appreciate in his books.
Oh yeah. And did you like, there was some artwork that was was taken kind of like lifted from an old AC/DC cover. I thought that was cool as hell.
Yeah. Awesome. Just awesome. So let's talk a little bit about Bard's Blade, because I'm really fascinated with the whole world you've built here. This concept of this area of the world that has been separated from the outside world, sealed off, as you said, magically. And the people there are kept separate and don't pass through the barrier because they can't get back. And this story is about people who pass through that barrier and discover some hard lessons on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I tried to make the fear justified, of course, their fear of that world justified, but also I didn't try to paint it in a completely negative light either. I mean, when I was setting it up, I kind of tried to keep in mind, like, moving from small town America to a LA or New York or somewhere like that, there's going to be a lot of scary things and a lot of really negative things that you would never encounter in a small town. But there'd be some good things too. There'd be some awesome, awesome experiences that you could have. But that was part of the world building. And of course, as you've probably, if you're halfway through by now, know, I take kind of a big swipe at fundamentalism. And,
yes, you do.
Well, you can never go wrong going after the fundamentalists.
It's not like they're big fantasy book readers anyway. So
yeah, they're gonna come after me anyway. So you know what the hell. But I try to make that contrast between people who are what that kind of mindset does to a society, as opposed to more open-minded thinking and the outside of the Raumarstadt, what you see in that area.
No, it's great, and I like the fact that you've got Lem that's out there on his own, and then you've got, I guess, it's Mariah and Shemmy that are that went searching for him, and it gives different perspectives because, of course, they're each having different experiences.
Yeah, and it also does kind of Lim's experiences immeasurably more pleasant in a direct way. I mean, overall, maybe not so much, but he's not thrust into the ugliness right away just because he zigged when he should he zagged when he should have. It's whereas Mariah and Shimmy zigged when they should have zagged. The first people that Lim meets send him in a direction that is vastly different than the direction Mariah and Shimmy go in because of the first perfect people they encounter, within the same world. It enabled me to tell two unique storylines that within the same world and give them two completely different experiences.
Yeah, it's great. And like I said, I've been enjoying it and I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah. And I don't know how far you are into it.
I don't want to give too much away because I want people to get the book and buy it. I don't want to jump in too far either because I want to let the people discover what I've discovered to this point and what I'm looking forward to discovering moving along.
One of the things I tried, to do, and this isn't so much of a spoiler, is initially you do think Lim is the focus of the story, but it's really Mariah.
Yeah, I get that.
And the further deeper you go into it, the more you realize the story is really about her.
Well, it opens with her. I mean, it opens with her helping to tend her father's business. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but then I turn it do a hard right towards Lem, but then I start steering back towards her. And you know, it was so much fun to write, and so far, you know, to me, it's best thing I've ever written. So hopefully everybody else feels that way.
I think it's great. And like I said, I've been really captured by it. And, you know, whatever relationship and situation, collaboration you've worked out with Lindsay and Tor has certainly, been to everyone's benefit. I enjoyed your other books that I read too. So I think that this seems great, and I'm expecting only better things from it. Now you've got this plan for, you know, putting things out, which is much different in the publishing world for what release schedules are like when compared to what you see in the indie world. How has that been different for you? Because, you know, indies write a lot faster for the most part.
Well, I've actually had to, I took a bit of time off from indie. I still have three books and that I'm currently working on to finish up my indie stuff. But, and it has been a challenge to balance the two, also, and to balance my health, because so much work, it kind of took a toll on my health. I had to sort of pull back for a little bit, because I have 17, 18, 19 books written, 17 of which are published right now. And I still have, before the end of this coming year, 4 more to write. So it's the publishing schedule is my indie publishing schedule has suffered as a result.
Well, and you know, I just was curious how you felt about having the juxtaposition of the two, because, you know, the traditional publishing world is speeding up. I've seen that much, you know, it used to be a book a year, book every 18 months. Now it's maybe 2 books a year, but not any faster than that usually.
I think it also has to, it's going to be weighed heavily upon the writer, whoever's doing the writing, their productivity. But I think they are coming to traditional public, not just Tor, but in general, are coming to the realization that if you can put a book out sooner, it's a good idea to, just because I think indie has put a lot of pressure on traditional publishing that way, you know, hey, we can't just sit there and hold back somebody's favorite author just because we want to. I don't know. Maybe that's not what they were doing, but
I've actually talked to a couple of people that have transitioned to become more hybrid authors from fully traditional published authors, some pretty big names, and the conversations they've had with publishers over the years included conversations that said that readers didn't want more than one book from an author a year, that there was not enough interest to do that. And I'm just like laughing hysterically, because what did I do when I was a kid and found an author I liked? I read everything they wrote in the library.
Oh, right.
And, you know, well, so
actually,
that wasn't true for me.
I have with Tor are just the opposite. They actually have been, they sort of been asking me a lot of questions, as many questions as I have for them. They seem to have for me as well, about how things worked in the indie world, you know?
Yep.
And because I'm not the only indie that they've picked up, you know. Tor picked up Duncan Hamilton. They picked up Kel Cade. Orbit's picked up a couple of people. So have Ace. And, you know, I mean, a lot of them, most of them are coming out of Spiffbo. But they're getting this, a lot of information from these indies like myself that are crossing over and realizing maybe they weren't, you know, they were kind of looking at it from a wrong perspective, you know, or from a perspective, I don't want to use the word ignorance, but it is an ignorant perspective, because they didn't have any frame of reference. You know, it's just like when my venturing into indie, I mean, into traditional, there was things I thought that but I was so wrong. You know, I expected this big corporate juggernaut to just be a pain in the butt, and it's been anything else, you know, it's been anything but that. It has just been just a bunch of dedicated people who love books.
And you know, there's something to be said for having that in your corner, you know, because being an indie is a lonely thing sometimes.
Oh God. Yeah. And I think what's happening, you're seeing now, is indie and traditional finding not just a way to just coexist, but a way to benefit from one another.
Yep.
You know,
I agree.
And as opposed to an us and them sort of mentality, you know, traditional publishers all across the board from, you know, from all five of the big five publishers have realized, hey, you know, some real talent out there. And also the, you know, the indies are learning that, you know, hey, these guys, you know, produce a lot of books, a lot of bestsellers and, you know, beloved authors for a good reason. It's not, you know,
they have access to the machinery of the traditional publishing world, to get a New York Times bestseller listing or, you know, which is a curated list.
Some of the greatest literary minds too. I mean, can you imagine being able to talk to Brandon Sanderson anytime you wanted? You know what I mean? Or Patrick Rothfuss or Brent Weeks or, you know, or Nicholas Eames, anytime you wanted, you could just get their perspective on things. You know, so I mean, this is knowledge that they have and that they've seen books flop and they've seen books thrive and they've seen what readers like. And I think some indies sort of get this sort of arrogance, you know, about it, about the way that, you know, that they work compared to, you know, compared traditionals, like, you know, hey, we're down in the trenches. Well, they're down in the trenches too, just in a different trench. Well, you know,
and some of that is the hubris of any individual entrepreneur, because you have to have that. You have to have that, like, almost blind faith and belief in yourself, to be in business for yourself and say, I can do this. But I think that line between the two has been blurring more and more as people are becoming, you know, what I call hybrid authors. You know, they've got a foot in both worlds, and they still produce on their own, but they produce some things for traditional on the side or in primary, whichever the case may be.
Well, even some of the well-known, like Brian McClellan and Dan Duane, put entries into the self-published fantasy blog off.
Yep.
And you know, they've obviously not, you know, I mean, I didn't even realize they had indie stuff, and they put stuff into there. So obviously doing some indie stuff for some of the bigger authors is becoming a more viable option. I mean, you got guys like, I say, Sanderson, I keep using him as an example. I couldn't even imagine him doing anything indie. I mean, with all, everything a guy like that must have on his plate.
Well, I'm
taking on more work.
You know, I know Kevin J. Anderson, done a couple of things with him, just done, you know, as a writer for retreats and things like that. And, he's collaborating on the Dune movie and working with, you know,
he's an animal though. God, man, just never stops.
Well, yeah, he doesn't, but I mean, he's got indie projects going on at the same time. He's working on the next Dune book and with Brian Herbert and, you know, trying to balance all of that. And, you know, you talk to him about it and he talks about the need to do both, that, you need to keep it. Basically, his mantra is keep your eyes open, and when the right opportunity comes along, whatever it is, you take it. But you don't close off your options anywhere else at the same time, which is what, you know, used to happen in some cases with traditional contracts, was you weren't allowed to publish.
I think the attitudes were different back in those early days, though. Yeah. You know, I mean, the attitudes of the talent, that the pool of talent within indie, what we were all about. I think there was a big communications gap and a big misunderstanding for several years. Because who did you have back in the early days? You had Michael J. Sullivan had crossed over from indie, and Hugh Howey, just David Dalglish, I think he crossed over from indie, but that was all you really had. And it was both worlds seemed so different from one another. I just think that enough time passed, and there was enough crossover to where there was just a lot of more understanding between the two worlds. And I think that's what you're seeing now and why you're seeing more and more hybrids spring up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm certainly glad that you have found that option for yourself. And, you know, as we kind of get to towards the end here, the Bard's Blade is coming out at the end of the month on what? Yep, the 28th?
January 28th. Yeah. Yes.
So that'll be just about a week or so after this episode comes out. It's available for pre-order. I urge people to go get it in paperback or on Kindle version, whichever.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please do that.
No, I mean, I think people will really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. The world building is just spot on and the characters are engaging and I can't say enough good things about it. Brian, what's next on your plate? You said you've got some things to wrap up in your indie world. Is there anything you want to talk about on that side?
Oh, I'm going to be wrapping up the final of the Godling Chronicles sequel that I did. I'm almost finished with that now. I'm about halfway to the end of that. The final Veil book I'm also working on, and the last in the Akiri series.
Awesome.
After that, I have a new series that I'm going to hopefully Tor will take a look at. Right now it's called A Forge of Worlds, but I found out that the DC Comics calls their thing Forge of Worlds. So I'm going to change the name of it. Anyway, it's as big as the world is in the Sorcerer's Song. This is more like on the scale of Stormlight Archives or Game of Thrones is for a size of the world. So
oh, wow.
That's what I'm working on next. Yeah. And I have 80,000 words of the first book already written. So
very cool. Well, it sounds like we got a lot of great stuff to look forward to from you, Brian. And, you know, hey, the door is always open here at the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast that I hope you'll take an opportunity to come back on when you know, some other of these projects come out, or book two in the Sorcerer's Song comes out in the summer or fall of next year. We'd love to have you back.
Anytime you want me, man.
Hey, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us again for a whole lot more. And also over at the Fantasy Focus community. You can find that over on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website on each episode podcast, you'll find many links and to show you how to subscribe to the show. So if you're an iOS user, an Android user, even an email preference there, you can subscribe and make sure you don't miss any upcoming episodes. We've got some great authors coming up over the next few months, and you don't want to miss any of them. That's it for this episode, though. I'm Jamie Davis, your host, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. Again, my Facebook page, you can be found at Jamie Davis Books. My website is jamiedavisbooks.com, and my Facebook group is Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. We want to have you there and check in. I post links to the podcast over there, and we'd love to have you join the community. Whatever you do, though, subscribe. Come back here for the next podcast. And in the meantime, I'd just like to remind you to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.